So Charlie, like before we get into this pitch, I think you have something you want to talk about regarding not this
Yes.
song, but a particular lyric in it.
Yes. So this song contains the lyric, "If I saw you drowning, I would not lend a hand."
Classic, iconic.
Bit much, no, considering the fact that he wrote it about his divorce from his ex-wife. But so,
Every day I wake up and wish you were dead.
yep. It's Phil Collins, Adam Driver. I don't know. Tweet us at Pitch Shift Pod.
Hey, the
No,
hurt doesn't
so.
show, but the pain does still grow.
No, so there was this interview with RuPaul, famous fracker RuPaul. No, so this could be from like 10 years ago, it could be from 2 weeks ago. I don't know because everything that RuPaul says is from the 90s. But RuPaul's talking about New York in the 80s, and then all of a sudden he starts telling this story. He's like, "Yeah, you know, I was like looking out of my window. I had an apartment on the Hudson River, and there was this guy, and he was like sailing, and his boat like capsized. And I was like, oh my God, I have to call someone, like this guy might drown." And then I thought, what could I possibly, you know, do? Like, I'm gonna pray for this person. I'm gonna pray for this person. I'm gonna send out good vibes, good energy into the world. I'm gonna pray for
Gonna
this
watch
person.
this
So
man drown.
literally, RuPaul saw a man drowning and did not lend a
A
hand.
hand.
And the
Do you
funny
want to
thing
know when
is,
he spoke about this?
when?
2015 to BuzzFeed.
Yeah,
And the
no,
thing is,
exactly.
a lot
It's
of people don't remember this, but I remember. I remember, don't worry. How could I ever forget? It's the first time,
exactly.
the last time we ever met.
Yeah. Wait, sorry, are you saying that that drowning man was you?
I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh, Lord. And I've been waiting for this moment for all my life. Oh, Lord.
So I'm very excited for this pitch, Sarah, but just know that whatever you pitch is not going to be nearly as chaotic as RuPaul
Watching a
watching a
man
man drown
drown.
and then being like, I'm gonna pray on this.
And then in 2015, being like, I feel the need to share this. This is
I'll
something
share
that I
this.
can talk about.
That means that
Like,
for about 20 years, no, 30 years,
30 years.
RuPaul played this event back in his head and was like, you know, I think I did the right thing. I have no
Yeah, in my
regrets
head, I
here.
did everything right.
Yeah, this is a story that I've held on to for 30 years and I'm willing to share because I did the right thing.
Yeah.
So the reason I'm pitching In the Air Tonight, look.
Our second Phil Collins song in
In a
four
month.
weeks.
Yep.
Yeah,
Yeah,
well,
second in a month.
I mean, like the idea that Phil Collins has other music is just ridiculous, but sure.
Well, to quote Jack Donaghy, of course I love Phil Collins. I got 2 ears and a heart.
Yeah, true. But I was like, one of the things that I've always wanted to do for a pitch shift was like, obviously, the lyrics to In the Air Tonight are pretty forgettable. They're fine.
I don't think, when you said I remember, I was like, is that a lyric to this song or do I just
Well, because you
misremember?
probably don't remember the lyric "I remember," but you probably remember the ridiculous, like, vocal panning effect of "I remember."
Maybe there's a good reason Weird Al has never done this song because no one would actually be able to tell it from the original.
Right, but nobody cares about the lyrics, but everyone fucking loves that drum fill and everything around it. So I wanted to
Get that
try.
Cadbury ad.
Create a Phil Collins, like a pitch for a movie that somehow incorporated the drum fill as a plot point.
Okay.
Because I
A
feel
film
like
Collins.
a film Collins with a drum fill, spelled
No.
PH. But then,
It's a drum fill.
when working on the pitch, it turned into like a weird political COVID satire. I don't really have to say with that. It just kind of worked for what I was doing. And then I realized that the ideas I had were very thin and couldn't sustain a full movie. They still don't, by the way. This is like a real half-assed pitch. But I watched The Seventh Seal today and I thought, oh yeah, I could just like remake The Seventh Seal as like the basic framing device for the rest
of the Seventh Seal.
Oh, love
it. How dare you half-ass a pitch on this very serious show?
I love
this show where we did Animal Crossing Noir last week.
Well, one of the best episodes. A lot of people are saying that was one of the best episodes we've ever done. A lot of people are saying that.
The thing is that, like, I don't have any fucking sense. Like, everyone in this is a function. Every character in this is a function. So, like, the casting game is wide open because it could literally be anyone.
To quote Patrick White award-winning playwright Kim Ho, I'm purely functional.
Yes, exactly. That's a deep cut for
fans of the Great Australian Play.
Yeah, that's going to reach audiences worldwide.
Someone's a Montague Basement stan.
Yeah. Okay.
Not Van Badham.
Stan Badham.
So anyway,
sorry, just before we dive in, should we introduce ourselves? I just realized we haven't.
Yeah, or what the podcast is. It's so hard doing this. Lockdown is hard.
This is Pitch Shift. It's a podcast where we turn songs into movies. I'm Tansy.
I'm Saro.
I'm Charles.
Sorry. Let's do that again. The guest should
also, for context, whenever Saro is on this podcast, something happens where, like, me and Saro just decide Charles is our little brother and we bully him for the whole episode. Mm-hmm.
We're not bullying you. Yeah. Zoom is bullying you. Like, we don't have to do anything.
Yeah, to be fair, Zoom started it today.
Yeah.
Zoom decided that I wasn't allowed to be one of the friends.
Zoom. I want you in my room.
The friends as in, like, the show friends? What a weirdly specific mean thing to do.
Yeah. Truly, I feel like the Ross of this podcast.
Can't wait till they remake Friends and they're all white, but one of them is trans.
It's like
that's going to happen. Let's be honest.
I mean, a lot of people don't know this. Joey was a trans woman.
Are you following Your Fave is Trans, the Twitter account?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. I think my favorite part of that was when the account creator did me and then you.
Yeah. You are trans.
You need to start Your Least Favours Trans because, you know, you just are all about exposing fascists.
Ben Shapiro is
a
trans.
Ben Shapiro.
Anakin Skywalker and Kylo Ren, both trans.
I mean, Kylo Ren is just a, like, fash boy YouTuber.
Fashy boy.
Like, that's not even, you know, Kylo Ren if he existed.
That's not really subtext.
Yeah, that's just text. All right, before this entire, like, before, also, I've got to make some ravioli, people, so we need to get this pitch on the road.
Let's get into it. Have you got any casting or context or elevator pitch you want to get out of the way before we dive in, or?
No, not really. Like, you can cast it along the way. It's a very vague outline, and you will be able to tell, like, how it's just all leading to one moment. Okay, so the year is, let's say, 2018.
Cool.
So
good time for everyone involved.
Yeah, we're let's leave that aside. The CDC, so we're in Atlanta. We're at the Center of Disease Control. And we meet a young scientist who's, you know, he believes that he's doing the right thing. Do not have a name for this scientist or a casting. So let's say it's Daniel Radcliffe for now.
With an American accent.
Yeah,
or
with a thick Southern American accent.
Thick with two C's.
Yeah, like a sort
I don't know
of Daniel Craig
that.
In let's Knives Out sort of Southern accent. Why
it's
not?
It's a donut with a donut inside.
Just as a sort of backup, if this movie tanks, at least it's that one where Daniel Radcliffe had the hilarious Southern accent.
Yeah, where occasionally people will lip sync to TikToks of it.
Yeah, totally. Like, it will become a cult hit just for that. Like my last movie where we had the amazing... Who was it that like was absolutely crazy? The what's her face from 13 Reasons?
Catherine Langford.
Oh, Catherine Langford. Like as crazy Terry Catherine Langford. In a film.
Just screaming expletives.
Yeah. You feel like you cunts are messed up.
None of my pictures are good, but they're future cult classics. So anyway, he's preparing a report and he's like, you know, he's really nervous. He like runs for, you know, he runs to his superior who I want to say maybe played by Alec Baldwin. Someone young.
Holly Hunter. Holly Hunter.
I don't know.
How did you get from Alec Baldwin to Holly Hunter?
Because I can do the voice.
That's a big leap.
Yeah, Owen Wilson could work. I don't know. It needs to be a bit of a, like, a dickhead. Like, someone pretty... Like, Bradley Cooper, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He is a dickhead. So.
I really hate Bradley Cooper as an... too real.
Are they just in this scene? Is it just a couple of...
He's important. Both these people are important. These are essentially our leads.
If we want someone who is, like, capable of playing a cunt but is not one in real life...
Yes.
My brain went to Andrew Scott, but that could be wrong. Or do we need someone, like, physically imposing?
You know what?
Someone as tall as Baron Trump.
Let's go Clooney.
That's a tall fucking boy.
All right, yeah, Clooney.
Let's go Clooney. Because Clooney, like, and you'll see, like, he does need to sort of be our protagonist for a bit, even though he can be an asshole.
And Clooney loves, like, a good social message film.
Oh, yeah, he produced this, probably.
Oh, yeah.
He might have directed it. Anyway, Daniel Radcliffe runs to George Clooney, and he's like, sir, I've been trying to send this report for days. You know, no one's looking at it. George Clooney essentially tells him, haven't you heard? It's an election year. We can't be sending it out. You know, we can't be frightening the people now. It looks bad. And he goes, but sir, you know, this could get worse if we don't deal with it now. And sort of, you know, George Clooney takes him aside and says, look, you know, this is not what I wanted to be doing with my time at the CDC. We've got orders from up top, kind of narrows his eyes, up top, to not let this kind of report get out there. He doesn't want to see it. He doesn't want to see what you have to say. And all you're going to do is cause trouble for yourself by pushing this. But sir, it's not, it's in the air. It's in the air. God.
It's coming in the air.
But not tonight. Not tonight. No. It's coming.
It's just coming.
It's just coming. And George Clooney says, I don't care if it's coming out of the Queen of England's asshole. See, this is why I think it was probably Alec Baldwin. That's the line you can imagine him saying.
Yeah, that's the line he improvised.
Yeah. Or Michael Wahlberg.
Michael
Shannon.
Yeah. Just because he did the impro on Knives Out where he was like, I will not eat one iota of shit.
Michael Shannon could work. I feel, all right, let's say Shannon for now. Okay, so Michael Shannon. No. I'm going to go George Clooney. I'm going to go back to Clooney because he needs to be a smooth operator and Shannon's just weird.
You think I'm crazy? Ah, is that what he told you?
Anyway, and then George Clooney like goes off on a private plane to visit who we assume is the top person of the United States. Maybe a president, maybe not. We don't know who it is. Then we get a montage of Daniel Radcliffe photocopying documents, you know, marking out his reports. We see like words such as mutation, airborne, plague, levels unseen, total, like just all the kind of scary.
Unprecedented in really big letters.
Oh yeah, totally in capital letters. Actually, you know what? Maybe we should set this in like 2006, like just before the financial crash, for an extra bit of like juicy metaphor.
Mm. Well, there's sort of, you know, reports from about 2006 being like, hey, you know that SARS we just had? We'll probably have another.
Yeah. Let's say it's set in 2006.
SARS
like that.
Two.
It's sort of like, you
SARS
know...
SARS 2, SARS 2 Furious.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he goes like he sets up a call to a journalist. Like, it's all very espionage.
Hush, hush.
Yeah. And he, like, is meant to be meeting this guy at a house, let's say. He goes into the house and he finds George Clooney there. And George Clooney says, look, usually they wouldn't send someone like me, but I cannot stress this enough. You cannot share this report with anyone. There will be consequences if you ever breathe a word of this. You no longer work for us, and you will never no longer work for any department of this government or any government afterwards. We can take away your livelihood, but you breathe a word of this and we'll take away more than that. So he sort of, you know, icy silence. Clooney walks away. And we flash forward to the year 2030, let's say, 24 mm-hmm. years later. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in Atlanta. The raging virus that comes in the air.
Tonight.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord.
It essentially, it kind of mummifies people. In incredibly, I suppose that's... look, I don't know what the exact science is, but yeah, it turns people into husks. It almost turns them into, like, stone.
Okay, so it kind of, like, does rigor mortis before death almost?
Yeah, I mean, they die, but basically there's... while there are cremations and, you know, burials, there's just a lot of bodies around and there's no decaying. So basically, like... there are just these sort of monuments of death everywhere. That's why I say mummifications.
So there's like a pyramid of bodies.
Yeah, there's just bodies everywhere and they're not decaying. It's just like, and you know, people are keeping their loved ones who have died from this disease. It's not an infection. It just, it comes through the air. It's a gas. It's a fog.
Mm. So there's a possibility that, say, Nana got that, cucked it, you can keep her in the living room and there's no risk of you catching it from her.
Yeah, there's nothing, like, if you're not...
it's not contagious, but it is airborne.
Yeah, it's just completely random. Like, no one knows how to stop this.
It's like the
this.
Happening.
Yeah, yeah, no one really knows how to stop this. It seems completely random who's getting it. It's just absolute chaos. Like, the country is in complete disarray. They've been cut off from DC. Most of the networks are down, internet's down. So, Clooney and his assistant, his deputy, do we want to cast them?
What kind of person do you want?
Yeah, give us the casting info.
Well, I mean, these supporting characters are largely just where I decided to rip off the Seventh Seal. Someone a bit stern, a bit sort of cynical.
Have you all seen John Wick 3?
No.
Are you going to say Jason Manzoukas? Because yes.
No, I was going to say Asia Kate Dillon, who they're in Billions and they're just
they're
like,
amazing.
They're very good at being like purely like career corporate assassin.
Asia Kate Dillon is very cool. And I wish I was them.
Sure. Okay. Asia Kate Dillon.
Representation.
Yes. Meaningful representation. We thought deeply about
it. Oh, the most meaningful.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got to play the evil people so that they know their place.
Oh, so, yeah, because I don't know if you guys know this, but trans people are evil.
Wait, what?
Anyway, continue your fucking pitch.
So, Clooney and the assistant.
Anyway, I mean, Clooney and the assistant is not that important. Basically, Clooney has to get to the Mississippi because there's rumors of a ferry that will take the rest of them to, oh, fuck, I don't know. Where does the Mississippi go that we can imagine as some kind of disease safe haven?
I don't do geography.
Well, that you would
on
ask
principle.
Either of us.
Well, the Mississippi River runs from England, Minnesota. Should we say Minnesota? Yeah. Also, like the Mississippi.
Oh, it goes to a town called Hannibal.
Great. All right, let's just say that. I say Hannibal, the Hamlet of Hannibal. I'm sure it's not a Hamlet, but it just sounds funny. I don't know. It'd be great if maybe they need to go to the Mexico border, because that would be, you know, some spicy political content.
Spicy.
That I am sure would get me some good plaudits on Twitter, but nah, it's got to be the Mississippi for reasons that you will see at the end. So they're going to the Mississippi because the Mississippi is going to take them somewhere important.
Right.
Yeah, it's. I told you it was well thought out. Along the way, he meets a pair of journalists and their infant child. And, you know, having been this cynical bastard that we saw, you know, this career climber in, you know, the opening, all he has now is just this group of people that he wants to protect, that he wants to live. And, you know, they trust him because they know that he was in this high up position when the disease spread. And, you know, everyone was caught unaware. No one knew about this disease. So, you know, maybe he knows more than other people do. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the reason I've put together this band of travellers is literally because that's just a remake of The Seventh Seal, and it just gives everything a few more stakes. Okay, so...
All right, proceed.
along the way, you know, it's your standard post-apocalyptic situation. You got looters, you got, you know, scenes of despair.
You got moon pirates.
You've got people who we see die before our eyes. It is questions of so much death, what does this mean? And along the way, he meets Daniel Radcliffe. But he does not recognise it as Daniel Radcliffe. Daniel Radcliffe...
But does Dan Rad remember?
Oh, he remembers.
Because I was going to worry, like, but now I won't worry.
Part of me is almost like, to show why he doesn't recognise him, can he just now be played by Elijah Wood and it's never, like... properly addressed.
Yes. Yeah, I like that. Yes.
For the second time in the Pitch Shift extended universe.
And then, that works for me. I mean, or it's just Daniel Radcliffe, but, like, he's got some old age prosthetics on. He's got a beard. Like,
he has a beard to show that time has passed.
And he's rough. Like, he's got, you know, a trench coat on, you know, got ammo over. Like, he is...
dark circles under his eyes.
Yeah. He looks like Swiss Army Man, you know, all of that.
Oh, yeah. he sees George Clooney and there's this look of recognition. But he sees that, you know, Clooney is not just in it for himself. He wants to help these people. And Dan reluctantly decides, all right, I'll help this guy find the Mississippi. Because he says, look, I know these parts. I know what to do. I know how we can get through a world that has gone as crazy as this one. And, you know, the couple, they're like, well, you know, how come you're so prepared? You know, what makes you so ready for a moment like this? And he says, well, I've been waiting for this moment for all my life.
Oh, Lord.
It's probably before some fight scene with a bunch of wasteland cannibals and he's, like, handing out weapons and he's got, like, an array of suitable armaments depending on different people's skills. How are you so prepared for this? I've been waiting for this moment for all my life. But then someone holding a machete just goes, oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord.
Or just, like, you know, he says that there's a long pause but the next line of dialogue is someone praying. Like, it's not even a quotation that follows on.
Just, oh, cut Lord. To a Southern Baptist church, like,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, oh Lord,
surely that's the same. Like, they go to a church and, you know, it's like the flock. It's a real road movie. It's sort of like got a bit of a Heart of Darkness vibe to it, or a Seventh Seal vibe, obviously. So, you know,
it'd be great to go into the church and, like, half of the pews would already be full of petrified bodies of people who died in there and, like, never left.
Mid prayer.
I love it. And then, like, the priest has some real philosophical kind of thing about it. This is how God wanted them left. You know, it's a reminder that they're left in prayer.
Sorry, we can hear Cyrus. We can hear your cat.
Yeah, there's not much... There's not much.
I love that got us both. Just the, like, I'm sorry, I can't listen to you.
I know you want to talk about philosophy, but your cat screams.
Probably some kind of bullshit, like saying of like, you know, we felt the rapture would, you know, we'd be left behind, but we didn't know we'd be left behind in our own flesh or something like that. There's a lot of like religious rambling, much like the seventh seal. Anyway, as they progress through their journey, the reason this has like a real vignette-esque structure is just because I didn't have much movie there, so I just thought I'd fill it in with religious musings on contemporary America. I'm going for that Oscar though.
Yep.
Anyway, so they settle down for camp one night, and you know the basic dynamic is that George Clooney is the emotional center of this group of survivors. Like he's the one that's really pulling them together, while Dan Radcliffe is he's the gruff, you know, he doesn't talk much, he's cruel, he's you know, he's difficult, and they really only tolerate him because he seems to know where he's going. And, you know, one night at the fire, when usually Dan Radcliffe doesn't speak, you know, they're all laughing and have a good time, and then suddenly he turns to George Clooney, says, "You can wipe off that grin, I know where you've been."
It's all been a pack of lies.
And Clooney looks at him and he's like, "Do I know you?" And he says, "No, you wouldn't know me. You wouldn't remember me. But I remember." I remember. Don't worry. How could I ever forget? Clooney. And Clooney's like,
"The first and also last time we ever met."
Yeah, I think we got to save that line for later. A lot of In the Air Tonight is just the same general sentiment 20 times. I can just randomly plop them in. Like, I don't really have rhyme or reason for when each line is said. Anyway, they go a bit further, and then Clooney realizes who he is. He goes, "Oh, fuck." And he says, "It's you, isn't it?" And he goes, "Yeah, I've seen your face before, my friend. But I don't know if you know who I am. I was there, and I saw what you did." And he replies, "You saw it with your own two eyes. That's right. And as I said, you can wipe off that grin, because I know where you've been. Has all been a pack of lies." Don't get ahead of yourself. So Clooney's suddenly on edge. He's like, you know, will this expose who I really am underneath? But, you know, Dan Radcliffe doesn't seem to want to destroy his reputation. After all, the world's collapsed. There's not much of a world anymore for him to have a reputation in. But still, Clooney's like, and who did we cast as his assistant?
Asia Kate Dillon.
So when talking to Asia Kate Dillon, he's like, "Look, you know, I did something to this guy back when I, you know, when I was the deputy, because he wasn't at the very top, but he was high up, and then he subsequently probably became the head of the CDC when this all went down." And he confesses, he says, I don't know about this guy. I'm worried. He still could be out for revenge. But ultimately, it doesn't seem like Dan Radcliffe is, you know, he's angry. But it doesn't look like he's going to act on that revenge at the moment. Anyway, so they're almost at the Mississippi. And suddenly, everything gets still. They've stopped seeing any people around. But they just hear this. And everyone's like, "What the fuck is that?" And Dan Radcliffe just has this knowing smile. "I've been waiting for this moment for all my life." And George Clooney goes, What are you talking about? You just got to be straight with me. You have to be straight with me." He says, "Did you read the report?" I mean, I read most of it. I knew that report could not see the light of day. And yeah, it might have been done. Maybe we could have prepared better. But look, you know, your report was right. We're all dead. He says, "But that wasn't what the report was about. See, these shells, these husks, to us it just looks like nothing, like emptiness. But the true violence is what's going on underneath. What do you mean underneath? Don't you see? These are like eggs and they're about to hatch. The loved ones that died, that we knew, that are now these statues lying around, they are dying inside. Because while the hurt doesn't show, the pain still grows. And suddenly, every single corpse bursts open with like a semi-humanoid monstrous creature. And they go, fuck, what do we do?
Oh, Lord.
And Dan Radcliffe turns and says, don't worry. They're no stranger to you and me. Pulls out two Glocks.
Yes.
He's been waiting for this moment for all his life. Just so we don't peek. Two Glocks in the air, gets aims and takes them out in one single. And it's just, he is running that final sprint to the Mississippi, taking them out. It's almost rhythmic. It's dun, dun. It's just this. I mean, this is like a real kind of, it's a beautifully edited sequence. It's balletic in its approach of, and he's just mowing down these creatures left, right, and center. Because he's been waiting for this moment for all his life. Because he could feel it in the air tonight. And anyway, so they get through this attack of creatures, and finally they get to the Mississippi, and there's a ferry. It's abandoned. They don't know if there's any hope to it. But anyway, so as he's fending off the different people, sort of zombie creatures. I imagine that they're not like zombies. They're sort of maybe like xenomorphs or something, you know, have fun. Prosthetics team.
I was thinking we get the team from Annihilation to do like what they did to a bear, but to a person.
I have not seen Annihilation.
So good. You'd Sorrow. Love it. You would love it.
Yeah.
Sorrowthy.
Like, yeah, something, or maybe like the weird creature at the end of Wreck, you know, something wrong, or the things in The Descent, you know, like people but wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
a little bit like why that limb so long? Yeah. Why that head so big?
Yeah. Anyway, so they're getting to the river, and he's filing them onto the boat. So George Clooney's kind of trying to get everyone off while Dan Radcliffe is just mowing down people, just keeping this steady beat of gunfire. And he's like, all right, I've got them all on you coming. He's like, go, 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 go. And as Clooney goes to jump on the boat, he falls into the river and he's drowning. And Dan Radcliffe pauses for a moment and he looks down and he considers. I mean, he's done his duty in protecting George Clooney. George Clooney's group. You know, they're on the boat, they're safe. He has no duty anymore to protect George Clooney other than a shared common sense of humanity. But does he have that humanity? And they look each other in the eye, and George realizes that this is the moment that he must pay for his sins. This is the moment where he learns that if he was drowning, Daniel Radcliffe would not lend him a hand. So Dan Radcliffe tells the boat to go, and he says, but aren't you coming? You know, there's nothing for me in that world anymore. And he pulls out two more pistols, looks at the drowning George Clooney, the boat goes off, and he just says to himself, oh Lord. Oh Lord. Guns blazing off. Clooney's drowned. We assume that eventually Dan Radcliffe is just surrounded by zombies or wraiths, whatever they are, before he eventually succumbs and runs out of ammo. Anyway, the boat arrives to safety and they, you know, say, is this it? Did we make it? Or maybe we don't get to actual land. They're just carrying on down.
There's smoke on the horizon.
Yeah, it's very kind of Apocalypse Now sort of vibe going down the river or up the river. I don't know where we decided what the destination was. And they ask, you know, do you think we'll find somewhere that will be safe? Says, well, safety might not be here. It may not be there. It might not even be inside of us. But I can feel it coming in the air. And then pauses. Tonight. Finn.
Good fucking lord.
Or Slut, as I like to, as the Swedes would say.
Because I was going to say there could almost be a recurring thing where Daniel Radcliffe is this weird fucking hanger-on protector, like establishes a rapport with one of the other group members, but he's always like, can you feel it coming? And then it becomes this whole thing of like, is it coming? And he's like, not yet, not yet, not yet. And then
trust me, I've been waiting for this moment all my life.
I can feel it coming in the air tonight.
Yeah, it needs some, or like maybe the last line, like I was just trying to come up with some ridiculous good last line, but it could also be the last line is a different Phil Collins song.
Yeah, I was almost saying it was that they landed and it was like, where are we? And someone's like, this is just another day for you and me in paradise.
It's another day for you and me in parasite.
Or the end is like, it's like Genesis.
Or someone's just like,
or they go into,
you know, my
mama
said
camp.
You can't hurry love.
They go into the camp and there's all of these people just like making music with various like pieces of equipment and cooking stuff, and it's just the fucking scene from Tarzan.
Or they just, yes. Or they just, you know, we did it against all odds, open brackets, take a look at me now.
Yep. Well, I mean, take a look at me now because there's just an empty space.
Yeah.
These people
all
got turned into husks.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing left here to remind me, just a memory of your face.
Did you know that Phil Collins was in A Hard Day's Night?
Was he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did know that.
He's a young fan in the crowd.
Just like Courtney Cox in the Dancing in the Dark music video.
I don't think just like that at all, because I'm sure that the Beatles didn't think that she was actually a real fan, and then got weirdly disappointed when Phil Collins, like, got weirdly disappointed when it turned out Phil Collins wasn't really
a fan,
just getting up on the stage to dance with him.
Yeah, you heard it here first. Phil Collins hates the Beatles.
That's the premise for the sequel.
Yeah. No,
Phil
that's
Collins
great.
Versus the Beatles, Dawn of Justice.
Anyway, yeah, so I think that that's 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10. Might
yeah,
be that
like,
rare
I can...
genre crossover that wins an Oscar.
Yeah, I can see it as like a deep contemplative Oscar film that is like borderline Emperor's New Clothes, where you can't say I don't get it, because then people be like, what, you don't get it? You didn't get In the Air
bit,
tonight?
Oh,
a little
it's
bit
directed...
The Dead Don't Die as well.
No, it's directed by, like, it's definitely directed by one of the Mexican, like,
Academy
lovers.
It's an Iñárritu.
It's
Babel.
It could be a Del Toro, or it could even be Alfonso Cuarón. Like, it could be...
I feel like Del Toro would get that horror creature element best.
Yeah, Iñárritu would be the really pretentious side of it, but... Cuarón would have like the good sort of journeying slice of life, but it's definitely
those really long Lubezki shots.
Yeah, it's definitely directed by one of them. I'm calling that now. guests, and they definitely get a nomination for Best Director for it.
I can see that.
Hmm.
Yeah, so do we have a better alternative for George Clooney?
Not really, because I can see Clooney doing that, being like, this is a weird enough movie to be like, I can do my weird. Like, if you were doing an Australian version, it would be Hugo Weaving.
Yeah, I just... Because he needs to be a prick at the
start. Get Mendo back. Bring Mendo back.
More
Two
Mendo.
Episodes in a row.
But he is essentially the protagonist in the second half.
Yeah.
Oh, could it be Michael Keaton?
Oh?
For that extra...
Yeah, you almost need someone who had a reputation for being a real cunt when they were young and then as a result, like, cleaned up their act and rehabilitated it. Look, what I'm saying is Robert Downey Jr.
No, because he can't act.
Hey, no one plays Robert Downey Jr. like Robert Downey Jr.
He does play Robert Downey Jr. incredibly well.
No, the tragedy is he actually can act. He just doesn't choose. He hasn't chosen to since the early 2000s.
I think the last film he did any acting in was Zodiac.
I mean, actually, to be fair, like, he does a lot of acting in Tropic Thunder. That is actually his most acting, probably. Maybe, yeah, I guess I think Clooney might... Also, Clooney hasn't really done anything interesting in a while, has he?
Yeah, he's been EPing Central Florida, and that's about it. Like,
yeah. I think this could be his big comeback.
Yeah, his return.
Yeah. And then...
Yeah. George,
Clooney,
give us a call.
Oh, actually, what about Jesse Eisenberg for the
neurotic Daniel Radcliffe. I can see that.
Yeah, that could work.
Side note, fucking Batman v Superman was on TV the other day and I'd forgotten that Jesse Eisenberg's entire performance was based on Max Landis and
it's so wild.
He's literally said this performance was based on Max Landis.
Honestly, like, learning that made me hate his performance in it a little bit less.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
like
I
knowing that it's like the reason
him.
He's yeah, like the reason he's so terrible is because he's pretending to be
he's
Max Landis.
A terrible
it's
person.
Like, all right. A little bit of respect that you were like, I'm just gonna, you know.
But if there's something, oh yeah, and he even has the daddy issues to go with it as well. Yep. Does that mean, like,
does that mean that Lex Luthor's dad killed someone?
What does that mean?
Oh, definitely.
But does that mean that whoever ends up playing like Lex Luthor Senior in the DCEU is going to base their performance on John Landis?
Counter offer: it is also someone who's killed someone, and it's just Matthew Broderick.
Ah.
Yeah. Bringing back the old favourites of this podcast.
All our murderers.
Maybe
who else is a murderer that we can reference on this?
Venus Williams.
Actually,
Caitlyn Jenner.
This isn't based on a song, although I'm sure we could find a song, but I think maybe we need to pitch like Ocean's 11, but everyone killed someone. Like all the actors killed someone.
Well, Charlie already used the song If I Killed Someone For You, so that's out.
Actors who have killed people. Hang
if
on.
I killed someone for you too, we all killed someone.
Oh, shit.
But also the whole point of If I Killed Someone For You is that he didn't kill anyone. He killed himself, but not really. He killed the person he used to be.
We get OJ, we get Matthew Broderick, we get...
RuPaul.
Caitlyn Jenner.
RuPaul's culpable.
Yeah, because we've established. Yeah, RuPaul is absolutely. If that man died, RuPaul
who else was
is absolutely,
in the car? Was it? Was
I don't know. That's
Jennifer,
a bit of a.
Was it Jennifer Grey in the car with Matthew Broderick?
Does that count though?
Yeah, I get. Yeah. Well, did she help or?
Caitlyn Jenner killed someone.
Yeah, Caitlyn
yeah,
Jenner killed
yeah,
someone.
She hit someone in the car.
I know. Well, Laura Bush, of course, is the other one. Oh, Snoop Dogg. Oh, yeah, that's right. Snoop Dogg was, we don't know, but probably definitely killed someone. Oh, fuck.
Okay, I'm just Googling famous people who killed someone.
Yeah, that's what I'm...
I think we're all literally doing that.
Can you imagine Caitlyn Jenner, Snoop Dogg?
Yes, Matthew I'll Broderick. Stop you before you... Yes, I need that buddy cop movie so fucking bad.
And maybe RuPaul. Maybe they try and recruit RuPaul, but they don't because it's like, look, I didn't. They were drowning. I didn't lend a hand, but I'm not a murderer.
But I prayed
Brandy
on it.
Brandy killed someone?
Brandy?
Yeah. Was involved in a freeway pileup that took a life. Brandy from the Cinderella with a black Cinderella.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, 50 Cent surely has killed someone.
Get John Wilkes Booth on the phone. I want him to be in this movie.
Howard Hughes. God, this movie's going to be amazing. Maybe it's a time travel plot and they go back in time and recruit John Wilkes Booth for the world's greatest heist.
Yeah, it's like it's David Fincher, and it's like Mindhunter in that everyone looks very much like, except that instead of being, you know, a thriller, it's wait, what is this? It's a heist. That's right.
They're stealing a movie. But for some reason, they can only recruit celebrities that have also killed people.
You know what? Mm-hmm. It's probably not even like they're not stealing money. They're breaking into the Supreme Court and stealing all of the records of their murders.
Yes, and fuck, I know who.
I'm making a comeback, baby.
I know who the bank is, like the financier that's organizing the entire thing. It's Phil Spector.
Mm-hmm. Never stand up and shoot a girl in the mouth with a gun. Where's my history of this? How come for the last 40 years?
Or either that, or they have to. Or Phil Spector is like their target. And they're like, we can't get through this wall. What is it? They call it the wall of sound. That's an amazing. I mean, look, I was quite proud of my Seventh Seal meets zombie outbreak meets In the Air Tonight. But honestly, I just want to see the time travel heist of murderous celebrities.
Well, our listeners have something to look forward to next time you're on the.
Yep. Can't wait. Can people find more of you, Sarah? If they want to stalk you.
On Twitter. What am I on Twitter again? Lusty Sarah.
You're Lusty something.
Oh, I know. Follow me on Letterboxd.
You're Lusty Sarah.
On Letterboxd.
Yeah. That's the only social media I actually give a shit about. Follow me on Letterboxd. I'm just under Sarah. I've already watched 115 movies during COVID. And it's been a time.
Ridiculous, man.
Keep your eye out on Monty Basement social media because there will be a live stream thingamajig in the near future, which we'll be announcing soon. So that's Monty Basement, Facebook, Twitter. Just Google it.
On your favourite search engine. Charlie, where can people get more of you?
People can find me on Twitter at GullsOChady. They can also find me on Letterboxd, but I think I'm like Charlie OG there. It's my Letterboxd and my Twitter are linked, so you know.
I am on Twitter and Letterboxd, and you can find me on there via the internet. Next week, who knows what the fuck it'll be. If you want to buy some croissants, send me a text. They're normally on sale on a Saturday morning.
I'm just now browsing Tansy's Letterboxd. I respect your low review of Little Women. I don't get your high review of Mudbound.
I love Mudbound. It's great.
I find it. Anyway, we'll continue this.
We should end this because I want to talk to both of you about why you didn't like Little Women. But
More importantly, have you come across my one interaction on Portrait of a Lady on Fire?
Oh, no. I mean, I see the review. Someone's going to.
I got letterboxed. I posted my first review, which was, I love this movie, No Men Talk. And within 2 minutes, someone had commented being like, that's not technically true. Anyway, did you want to finish the podcast, Charlie?
Yeah, I did. Cause so that we could have that conversation, you know, at our leisure. If you like the podcast, give us a review on Apple Podcasts. We are there. We are on Stitcher. We are on Pocket Cast and we are on SoundCloud. You can check us out on Twitter or Instagram at PitchShiftPod. And if you want to email us for whatever reason, just say hi. I'm so lonely. PitchShiftPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, as always, for listening. We love you very
much.
And
if you have any questions about Star Wars, email them to us. We want to do a thing.
Yeah, email PitchShiftPodcast@gmail.com with your Star Wars questions.
Bye.
Alrighty. Bye. Goodbye.
Yeah. So my problem with
I remember. Don't worry. How could I ever get it's the first
like there's no real conflict because everyone's just trying to be like the nicest possible thing ever.
I also found it had a really weird relationship to charity where it represented like selflessness as being a thing you did to get a reward, because there's that bit where they give their breakfast to the Hummels and then they come home and they've been given a better breakfast, and you know, like Beth is giving the presents to rich old man and then he gives her other things, and basically yeah, like I found it had this weird idea where it represented kindness as part of an economy and capitalism, and I was like,
yeah, I feel like that's
especially strange when you then show Beth die because she was kind and like kept visiting the Hummels, like
but all that shit
kindness will bring you rewards except for when it doesn't.
Yeah,
felt like such
I also think angry is the most.
Of Pitch Shift was recorded on the land of the Wiradjuri people, the land of the Gadigal people, and the land of the Wurundjeri and Boonwurrung people. Sovereignty was never ceded, and this always was, and always will be, Aboriginal land.